again. This is Jordan Hussey, Executive Director of Jay's Place Recovery Center in Gainesville, Georgia. Welcome back to our podcast, The Journey. I'm so excited to share today's conversation with you. We sat down with Judge Jason Deal and Accountability Court's Jesse Emmett to discuss the impact of drug court on the recovering community and on Northeast Georgia. I'll confess, we got a little weepy a couple of times from pure gratitude for what we've seen because of the impact of drug court and helping people succeed in recovery. I hope you enjoy. My name is Jordan Hussey, and we are here at Jay's Place today with Judge Deal from the Accountability Courts here in Hall County. And I want to thank you for taking this opportunity to meet with us. I know your time is valuable, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I'm very happy to be here at Jay's Place. It's my honor to be with you today. Jay's Place has been a tremendous asset to the recovery community in Hall County and to drug court in particular. We appreciate the partnership.
As do we. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what is drug court for those who don't know, and then maybe how did it come about? What was it like before?
Well, drug court is a rehabilitation program that's run by the court in Superior Court. And so in order to get into drug court, you have to have a felony charge. You either plead guilty to the charge and the state agrees that they'll dismiss the case if you successfully complete drug court, or alternatively, you end up coming into drug court on a probation violation or on a new charge where you're sentenced and the condition is that you complete drug court. Drug court is a 24-month program. It has 24 months of curriculum. It involves going to class, having individual counseling, rigorous random drug screens, usually at least two times a week, and also appearing in court regularly to meet with the judge where sanctions are handed out if you don't follow the rules, and also where incentives are given if you're doing well in recovery.
We at Jay's Place deal a lot with the participants in a lot of the accountability courts, but for those who maybe don't know, what are the benefits to someone who is choosing drug court rather than maybe going to prison?
When drug court first started, you had to have no prior felonies and you had to have a drug offense. So you would be arrested for a drug offense. If you qualified, you could plead guilty, come into drug court, and if you completed the program, your charge would be dismissed, which was a tremendous incentive for those folks because they didn't have a conviction on their history. Drug court has evolved, and we've realized that really drug court's more effective with higher risk individuals. And so now most of the population in drug court has prior felony convictions, multiple prior felony convictions, and they're facing the possibility of going to prison for the offenses for which they're accused. But if they choose to come into drug court, they can avoid that prison disposition and instead remain in the community and get treatment for the issue that's causing their criminal behavior. It ultimately is a good deal for the participants, but also for our community and our state.
And so instead of, you know, becoming a menace to society, they're actually treating the disease itself. And that's important, I think. Also overlooked, you know, most of us, as for myself, when I went into jail, 90% of the people that were there, regardless of what their charge was, usually stemmed from a disease of addiction. So would you agree with that?
I would. And I think I have a bit of a biased view because I've done drug court for so long. My wife says I think everybody has a drug problem that's in trouble. But I think for a large percentage of people, that's the truth, that addiction is playing a role in whatever criminal behavior they're involved in. It's not the only issue, but it certainly plays a huge role in what we see in court.
So tell us a little bit about how did drug court come about here in Hall County?
Well, that's a really interesting question because I wasn't the judge when drug courts first started here in Hall County. In fact, the first drug court in Georgia was actually in Macon, Georgia. And Judge Gerardo, who was one of the judges here in Hall County, saw how that program was working in Macon and decided that he wanted to try that program here in Hall County. He said, I'm tired of seeing the same people coming back in front of me for the same problems and going back to jail. And he's been on the bench long enough that he said, you know, I'm tired of seeing their children come in front of me and sending them to jail for the same thing. So he started the program, and it was a heavy lift, quite honestly. Judge Gerardo had to put together a coalition of team members and partners in the community. He had people like Dan Summer, who was a defense attorney, one of the best defense attorneys in town. He had the prosecutor's office. He had other community partners involved. New Hope Counseling played a role in that development. And in fact, I was a young assistant district attorney at the time, and I was assigned to Judge Gerardo's courtroom. And so when he decided he wanted to start a drug court, my boss told me, well, you're in his courtroom, you just go do whatever it is he wants you to do. So I had the opportunity to see how drug court was planned in the stages leading up to the actual implementation of drug court. Got to ride in a prison van down to Macon to watch drug court in Macon and participate in some of those things. And ultimately, drug court started in 2001. Judge Gerardo ran that program. It was a fairly small program, and it only took in, like I said, the low-risk offenders who would qualify for a NALPROS. But he retired in 2005, and so when he retired, I put in and was appointed into his position, and was lucky enough to be assigned to do drug court. And I begged him to continue to do drug court for at least 6 months so that I could get my feet under me. So he continued to preside over drug court, even though he was retired, for about 6 months, 7 months. And on January 1st of 2006, I began presiding over the Hall County Drug Court.
Did it start with just drug court and then kind of, you know, because I know that in the accountability courts, there's DUI court, family treatment court, vet court, help court. I'm probably going to miss one. How did it go from maybe one, or did it go from just one?
It did. You know, Judge Gerardo's truly the father of accountability courts in our circuit for sure. He started the drug court in Hall County, and people started seeing that it was being successful. And so soon thereafter, the DUI court started. Our DUI court here in Hall County was one of the few pilot programs in the state by Judge Charlie Wynn, and that program's been running for a long time now. Soon after that, family treatment court was started by Judge Cliff Jolliffe, and that program has been strong. And we were mostly operating in Hall County, which is the biggest county in our circuit, until about 2000. Judge Goslin started Help Court. She started Help Court in 2002, I think, 2003. I was the district attorney and got to participate in the planning of Help Court as well, so that was a pleasure. But we started off in Hall County. And then as things started to evolve, when Judge Gerardo retired, one thing he made me promise was that I would start a drug court in Dawson County. He had already been planning it and had made me make a commitment that I would start a drug court in Dawson County. So with the help of Jesse Emmett and other folks in the drug court in Hall County, we started the planning and we implemented a drug court in Dawson County in September of 2006, I believe. And thereafter, it expanded into family treatment courts now in Dawson County, mental health courts now in Dawson County. Our drug court in Dawson County now has a DUI and drug court. So we pretty much covered the gamut in Dawson County as well as Hall County. You ask about Veterans Court. Veterans Court was a new idea just a few years ago, and Judge Goslin is presiding over the Veterans Court. It fits well with the Mental Health Court with some of the same curriculum, and so she presides over that court as well.
I know that most people that work in this field or have their hands in recovery and substance use kind of have some sort of near and dear to their heart for some reason. Obviously mine is because I'm in recovery, but do you mind if I ask what it is for you?
You know, I don't have a very, you know, really close history with someone in recovery in my family, but I certainly know lots of people that have struggled with addiction issues. But I think it's just, it's what we all struggle with, right? It may not be drugs or alcohol, but everyone has a failing. And I think my faith says that we're supposed to help people that are struggling.
I know that in my own disease, right, I didn't think that recovery was an option. And so death was the option. And you know, and it's one of my passions is to let people know that you have the options. And so it makes me really proud that people are working alongside us to do that same thing. And I feel like I'm very passionate about this community and the work that the accountability courts are doing, because it's offering options that I didn't necessarily have. And I kind of joked with you earlier and said, you know, we just went straight to prison. And that was what was called for in my case. However, you're giving people opportunity after opportunity to not only change the behavior, but to reflect on the behavior and to recognize, you know, what it is they're failing at and why it's important to change and how that connects to substance use and recovery, which took some of us years and years to figure out, you know, that if I just stop using, I'll stop going to jail. So what is it like for maybe a client, you know, coming into, or a participant coming into the program? What do they see, you know, and kind of what drives them from your perspective, maybe?
I think most people when they come into drug court are scared to death. And you know, should be, because it is a total life change. Yeah. You know, most of these folks have suffered from addiction for a long time. They've lost everything that they had. They've lost those family connections, that support, and that sort of thing. And they come into drug court, and we tell them, not only do you have to call the screen line early in the morning and come drug screen at a moment's notice, at least two or three times a week, but you got to go to all these classes. You got to come to court. You have to work a job, and you got to prove that you're working. And it's got to be a legitimate job. It's a lot, and it's a tremendous change from somebody who hasn't been living that lifestyle for a long time. So I think they're scared, but it doesn't take long that they start seeing, you know, this structure really helps me. And they start getting things back together. And it's amazing that the people they think would have nothing to do with them love them still when they start seeing that they're doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the beautiful thing about recovery in general is all the bridges we thought we burned, not necessarily burned. So, you know, when you think about maybe a specific success story that just keeps you, you know, because we have those days where it feels like we have just, no matter what we've done, we failed. And I'm sure that you guys have those days as well. What is that, you know, one story in the back of your mind? And you don't have to use names, of course. I want to respect everyone's privacy, but what's that story for you?
You know, it's hard to narrow it down to just one. But, you know, in my normal work, it's mostly pretty miserable. You know, I do lots of divorces, people fighting over children and dividing up their stuff, and they're usually unhappy. And then there's the other criminal work, which is a majority of what I do. And, you know, people robbing and stealing and having to send them to prison, that's not a pleasant thing. You know, usually nobody's real happy to see me. Yeah. But drug court is different. You know, you get to see people that are happy to see you. And I've never had anybody say, thank you for sending me to jail. It's up in drug court. So that's a pleasant change, because they know that I'm doing it because I'm trying to help them, not because I'm hateful or, you know, that sort of thing. But I think some of the successes are just, you know, I have, I think, three or four people who went through drug court who now work for me. which is awesome.
That's awesome.
The Georgia Trend magazine does, was it 40 under 40? Supposed to be the 40 elite people in the state under 40 every year. I only know two people that are on that list. Not me, but my wife and somebody who graduated from drug court.
Wow.
So pretty impressive. You know, it takes a community, and I think, you know, like Jay's Place, when y'all first started, I was like, you know, we've had so many things that have started like this, but it's become great. And I hear people that are graduating talk about how, you know, why I like going to Jay's Place, and that's where I do my meetings, and that's where I do my community service,
yeah.
And, you know, it's really doing well for me. And that's powerful because we need some places like that. And I think this is the first place that has realized what the mission of drug court is and has been willing to work within those parameters. I mean, we used to have battles every year or so with somebody not wanting to sign sheets saying that they had gone to AA or whatever. But, you know, we need to make participants go get involved in that community because eventually it's going to take.
Right.
But they're not going to behave all the time at the beginning.
Yeah.
And there were some groups that were very resentful when they had these mandated people coming to their meetings and were kind of being ugly and immature. Y'all have been great about just realizing that's just part of it. And,
yeah.
You know, that these people need treatment too. And if, was an analogy I've told somebody sometime, you know, I feel like sometimes you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But if you hold them there long enough, they're going to get thirsty and they're going to drink.
That's right.
And so part of my job is just get people to the creek,
mm-hmm.
you know, get them there, and then hopefully they take what's available. And y'all have been a tremendous part of providing that resource to allow them to take what's available and then help them build from once they start realizing what recovery is about. Y'all have helped them move forward and grow and get bigger and do what they need to do to live a life of recovery, not just a year or two.
That's the goal. I mean, you know, our mission is, I mean, we want to respect, of course, whatever program they're in. And, you know, I have a few jokes here that I'll say we all needed a nudge from the judge at one point. Like, and we were all that person walking into a meeting for the first time that shared about things people shouldn't have shared about and acted out in meetings in ways we probably shouldn't have. And I think as long as we remember that, you know, it's bigger than us. And my running joke is, you know, we get them in here for community service. And then we love on them,
right?
And ask them about themselves, and ask them what's going on, and just, you know, when you hear people say things like "I found my home," you know, and or like "I know I can always come here," and you know that's what it is for us. It's like, man, you know.
Well, and it's more. Y'all are larger than drug court. I mean, I have an employee who has a relative, and I was saying, well, I got to go to Jay's Place and tape a podcast, and they told me, said, well, you know, my relative, they go there. And I'm like, well, they're not drug court anything. No, they go there because they say that it helps them keep their mind clear. It helps them, you know, live a daily life. So it's bigger than drug court, what you're doing, but it certainly is a huge part of drug court as well.
You know, I had so many fears when I started here, and every door has just been opened. Like, you know, the first day here, I prayed over this building and I was like, God, bring the people that are supposed to be helped. And I don't want to be in competition with other people. I just want us to help and be whatever's missing, because there were so many things. Like, you know, when I came out of prison, I didn't think anybody would ever hire me because I was a convicted felon. And then I had, you know, worked from home for my own business for so long. I was like, who's going to care about any of that, you know? And then obviously the fear and shame of substance use and starting all over. But I had so many people believe in me. And that's what I think each of us in our own roles does for these people is like, we expect you to do it because we know you're capable of doing it. And if you need help, we'll do it with you. I'm not going to do it for you.
Right. Well, that's sort of the mantra for drug court too, right? I tell people every day, all the time, that look, you know, we're not here to beat up on you. I know that every other time you've been in court, you felt like somebody was beating up on you. I'm not here to beat up on you. I'm here to give you opportunities, but you got to do the work. Mm. You know, the motto of drug court is show up, be honest, and try. And if they'll do those three things, everything else is going to fall in place, because everybody on the drug court team, from the prosecutor to the defense attorney to the law enforcement to the judge, we all want them to be successful. I mean, you know, I see success is putting myself out of business when it comes to dealing with criminal law. You know, I don't see that happening anytime soon, but we are making a difference. There are people that are changing their lives. And I think the attitude of the community has really changed. You asked me at the beginning, what was it like before? And I'll tell you that when I started as a young prosecutor, I think it was 1998, a possession case was a go to jail case. And a possession with intent case was a go to prison for 4 years case. That's what happened. And there was no recovery. There was no support network. I mean, there were some around, but nobody knew about them and knew how they played a role. I think the Halt Club was still here. I mean, it was there at that time. And maybe Kickstart, but that was about the only recovery places around. And now we have, you know, such a vibrant community. We have Kickstart and Turning Point and The Way Up and Angel House. And I know I'm leaving that Star House. I know I'm leaving more out, but the community has just really embraced recovery and provided resources. We have meetings all over the community now. And so I think the attitudes are changing, and we see that it's working. The attitudes are changing because people see that it's working. And I think that makes a huge difference. It certainly, it's nice to be able to give people options. And if somebody wants to get in recovery, wants to get clean and turn their life around, at least in this community, they have the opportunity to do that. I don't know that that's the case in every community in the state, but we're trying to change that too here in the state.
Thank you, Judge Deal, for your kindness, tender heart, and for talking with us today. Before I introduce our listeners to Jesse Emmett, I wanted to ask you all to take some time to give us some feedback on our podcast. We've planned episodes on the impact of trauma and addiction, the role of sponsorship and personal accountability, addiction to mobile devices, shopping, eating, and so much more. And we'd love to know what you want to hear about. So please take some time to shoot us an email with your thoughts. Thank you for tuning in and for telling others about the journey. Now let's get back to our discussion on accountability courts with Jesse Emmett. Joining us this morning with Judge Deal, we have asked Jesse Emmett, who is one of my very dear friends, to talk about, you know, how did you get involved in drug court? Like, what did that start for you?
So I've been with the accountability courts for 14 years now. Having to add it up in my head. I actually started as an intern back in 2007 with drug court when I was in my master's program for counseling.
On average, how many participants would you guys say that you serve?
We serve on average between 450 to 500 participants on any given day between both counties. We do have a family treatment court in both counties, so we don't directly serve their children, but we do a lot of services for children as well, and that probably averages around 200 children. So we're a little unique of the accountability courts in the state of Georgia because we all serve under one agency umbrella, so we share resources. All of our Dawson programs are housed in the same building. All of our Hall County programs are housed in the same building. Our lab services, all of the programs. So because we have this one agency, we pool all of our resources financially, staff-wise, so we're able to stretch the dollar a lot more and offer more services. But we do a lot of our counseling in-house. We also contract with different providers. We've had a long-standing partnership with like New Hope Counseling. Cornerstone Counseling provides lots of services for us. So AVITA is a huge partnership that we have that provides some direct services, especially with our mental health court. But we are running on average 75 groups a week in-house in our building. We offer 115 hours worth of treatment every week for all of our programs. So folks that come into our programs, they're having to drug screen regularly 2 to 3 times a week. They are coming to court. Some programs, they're there every week. Some, it's every other week. But on a minimum, they're interacting with our judge once a month, usually when they get further on into the program. They're in groups multiple hours a week. We offer group and individual counseling. We have case managers with all of our programs. So our folks meet with our case managers to make sure that they're not only just meeting the basic requirements of the program, like employment or going back to school, if they're unable to work, making sure that they're volunteering and doing something productive with their time in the community, but also help them with the wraparound services. We really try to target what are the issues that our folks are struggling with. Is it housing? Maybe they have housing, but it's not the most recovery friendly, or it's not a stable house. If somebody is afraid, like, I don't know where I'm going to lay my head tonight, or I don't know where I'm going to get a meal tonight, long-term recovery is not at the forefront of their mind. So we want to make sure that we're really trying to capture all the services. Are they underemployed? Did they finish school? Do they have, you know, dreams of going back to school and achieving something that maybe, you know, kind of went on the back burner during addiction? Medical, dental, those are things that a lot of folks, you know, come in and they've neglected for several years. So we're trying to link them in the community with that. Childcare. Maybe they are in need of clothing or food. So we really rely on a lot of the partnerships in the community. I mean, Jay's Place is a huge partnership with us. The local food banks, there's tons of local churches. Hall County and Dawson County both, I think, are just probably the richest in the state when it comes to just community resources and nonprofits and recovery-friendly activities and folks that care. You know, it's a very caring community, and I think that's what makes our program so successful. Is we try to be a one-stop shop, but our goal truly is at the end of, you know, 18 months or 24 months when someone's through with us, we don't want them to come back through our doors. We only want to see you if you're coming back as a mentor, or you're coming back as a program graduate to give back, not because you didn't get what you needed the first time. And your foundation wasn't strong enough, and so now you're back in the cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell our folks all the time, if we're doing our jobs correctly, then when they graduate, they have all the tools that they need in this community. They've built that foundation. They have their connections. They have the life that they're proud of, the life that they want. And we just played a small part in that, like helping get them there.
So we talked about Judge Deal's motivation and kind of that one story that kind of he keeps in the back of his mind. What would you say that is for you?
I think kind of like Judge Deal, it's hard to pinpoint, you know, one story. I do have a very vivid memory of a client that I had probably 11 years ago on my caseload who I had to talk to about a drug screen that had come back positive for a substance, and it was just a lot of denial. And then finally, you know, she just broke down. She was a mother, she had 3 children under the age of 5, single mom, just really struggled. And she was someone that when she first started with us, like maybe I could get 5 minutes in a session with her where she was not squalling, because she was just broken. Mm-hmm. She was broken and she didn't know what to do. And then you could just kind of see her building her strength and building her self-confidence every day, and it was just beautiful. And then we have this drug screen happen, and she told me that her power was due and her rent was due, and she didn't have enough for both. And so she went to her landlord and said, hey, can I pay you in 2 weeks when I get paid again, because I need to pay my power bill. And he agreed, but only if she slept with him. So she had a decision to make, you know, do I pay the power bill so my children have power and potentially get kicked out, or do I make the sacrifice? And so she got high in order to make the sacrifice for her children. And I'll never forget. I'll never forget that story. I get goosebumps every time I tell it. You know, we ended up sending her to a residential facility out of county. I went and helped pack up her house and her three children, and I drove her to residential, and she flourished and she thrived. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 5 years ago, I was just randomly at the courthouse one day and I heard somebody say, "Miss Jessie," which is normally not a thing, because that's anybody that says that is like, okay, you know me from work. And it was her, and she was there and she looked fantastic and she was still doing great, and she had her own house and her children are, you know, in high school now. And I was like, that's it. So that is always, I guess, one of my biggest success stories.
Yeah. Wow. That's
powerful.
Mm-hmm. Powerful.
That's all her. And how I got started in the field, I'm not in recovery myself. But my grandfather, which for some folks in the community that have been in recovery for a while know Jay Tilley, Mr. Jay, his picture is in the Halt Club. So he was in long-term recovery. He was an Alcoholics Anonymous historian. He raised me going to big book studies and AA meetings from the time I was born. My family has a rich history in recovery. He absolutely just kind of drilled into us the importance of recovery. And he always told me, the day you get tired of being taken advantage of because you're helping someone is the day you need to check what you're doing, because you should always be willing to be taken advantage of if mm-hmm. it means you're helping somebody. And, you know, he used to detox folks on his couch in his office at home. My grandparents, you know, that's what they did. And they both worked in the field. And then my mother is a substance abuse counselor and has been, you know, running a residential facility for 30 plus years. And she is a far better counselor than I will ever be and ever claim to be. It's her true gift from God. But I just kind of fell into it, and I love it. And the greatest people I know are in recovery. I think that it is something that, whether you personally have gone through issues of substance use or not, just kind of like Judge Deal said, we all have our faults and we mm-hmm. all have those shortcomings. And I think that it's hard to find someone that's not touched or affected by recovery, whether it's mental health, whether it's substance use, whatever that looks like. So I love it. It's in my blood, I guess.
It is, for mm-hmm. sure, in your blood. Mm-hmm. So we know that with COVID, this pandemic really kind of changed the way that most of us do most things. Mm-hmm. And I know that Jay's Place personally has been impacted in a great way, but in a very large way. So what was that like for treatment services and the accountability courts?
It was huge. Just everything that we did shifted, because we have been in operation, like Judge Deal said, since 2001. So this year marks the 20th anniversary of drug court in Hall County, which is very exciting. But we, since day one, our groups have always been in person. Our drug screening, obviously, is in person. Our case management, everything that we do is one-on-one with our folks. We never offered telehealth. We didn't do anything virtually at all. So within the span of a week and a half, we had to cancel meetings for 1 week and have folks do kind of outside meetings, which, thank God for Jay's Place, when y'all really picked up all of the outside meetings for us when we had no other options. We created a virtual platform. We moved everything that we had onto Zoom. We wrote new policies. We trained our staff. We really, kudos to our staff, because we were able to create an entirely new set of protocols within a week.
Wow.
Basically, to offer the groups. And we really, you know, especially with the folks that we serve, you know, change is hard. And we always see an uptick in relapse. We see an uptick in symptoms, you know, inability to manage stress very well. Yeah. So we really try to make sure that we're keeping everything even as we can and consistent, which we try to do during COVID as well. But we were able to still offer our groups online. We did have some disruption for a few months. We overall decreased our services by 31%. But since July, we've actually added more treatment than we were doing prior to COVID. So we were able to bring in new technology. We have been able to offer some groups actually in-house, but mm-hmm. still have the ability for folks to zoom in to those groups if they're under quarantine. We still offer a lot of services online. So we really shifted, but during that shift, we were able to do a lot of things that we haven't done before, like folks that were on medical leave before for whatever reason. You know, we had no way for them to still be involved in treatment. Now they can.
Yeah.
Our drug testing, we primarily use urine drug testing, but we started implementing some different types of methods, which I think that we'll keep. You know, when folks take approved leave, we still have a way of keeping them accountable. You know, every time somebody drug screens, it's not a matter of we're going to catch you doing something wrong. It's an opportunity to prove that they're doing something right.
Yeah.
And so that accountability is really important. And we actually had a lot of participants during quarantine or over the summer that said how much they missed coming to the building, how mm-hmm. much they missed that one-on-one and that person-to-person interaction, and how much they missed the drug screening and accountability, mm-hmm. which you never thought people would say. But we try not to skip a beat. So our programs were part of a publication nationally talking about the protocols that we put in place during the pandemic, which was an honor to have. Our programs and some of our staff were also recognized by the state this past year. All of our courts are model courts for the state of Georgia. Through the Council of Accountability Court Judges. Judge Goslin was named, she was given the inaugural Judge Steve Goss Award this past year for mental health courts. Heather Harrington was recognized by the Georgia Addiction Counselors Association as a Counselor of the Year. Some of our defense attorneys, Hal Walker, was given an award by the state this year as the star defense attorney. So. We also, our agency was awarded the data-driven award, which was the inaugural award by the council for the amount of data that we collect on and give to the state and how we use that every year.
Wow.
So, yeah, our program's got lots of accolades this year, so we're very proud.
So, in closing, I just wanted to say thank you so much, Jesse Emmett, Judge Deal, for joining me today and just, you know, making time to sit down and talk to us at Jay's Place about this beautiful partnership that we have with you guys, but also just to kind of go over everything that the accountability courts do and what an impact they're making in this community and in the state.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks again for joining us for our podcast. Our very own Greg O'Hara wrote and recorded our theme song. Be sure to give him some encouragement when you see him. Could it take you on?